The headlines: Iran's president says Tehran supports multilateralism as Tehran gains full membership of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a major economic and security bloc. Israeli forces attack anti-settlement Palestinian protesters in the occupied West Bank, injuring dozens of them. And also in our headlines, the Yemeni army says it has taken control of vast areas of Ma'arib province from Saudi-backed militants. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, says the Islamic Republic supports diplomacy and multilateralism and rejects a policy of sanctions and pressure.
Diplomacy is one of the means to ensure national interests of countries. It is efficient when all sides remain committed to their obligations in practice. Threatening and pressuring other sides weaken diplomacy.
Raisi made the comments at the 21st annual meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Dushanbe, the capital of Tajikistan. He called the sanctions a big challenge to the world today, saying the domineering states have been using them as a tool to impose their will over others. The Iranian president also underlined that the sanctions are preventing regional cooperation and urged the SCO to define mechanisms to fight these challenges. He added the world is moving toward a new order that favors independent and sovereign states.
The world is entering a new era with a new order. Domination and unilateralism are on the decline. International order is moving toward multipolarization and redistribution of power in favor of independent states.
Raisi further condemned the U.S. for causing chaos in the region, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said Washington needs to be held to account for what it has done in Afghanistan over the past 20 years. While rejecting foreign interference, Raisi noted that the sole way to establishing security in the region is through regional cooperation. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization has officially given Iran full membership by unanimous decision. Iran is now the ninth member state of the economy-oriented regional organization. The decision was made at the SCO's 21st annual meeting underway in Tajikistan's capital, Dushanbe. The two-day meeting began earlier on Friday. It brings together heads of states and top officials from member and observer countries. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi is in attendance. He thanked the Shanghai Cooperation Organization for supporting Iran's full membership. The country joined the organization in 2005, that is, as an observer state. Israeli forces have violently clashed with anti-settlement Palestinian protesters in the occupied West Bank, injuring dozens of them. The Palestinian Red Crescent says the regime forces attacked the protesters with rubber-coated bullets and tear gas in the towns of Beita and Beit Dajan, south of Nablus. Similar demonstrations were also held in the city of Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil, where Palestinian and Israeli activists decried the regime's confiscation of water supply equipment for Palestinians' villages. Tensions have been running high in the occupied territories for months over Israel's settlement activities and its planned eviction of Palestinian families from their ancestral homes. Many Palestinians have been killed and scores wounded in the Israeli crackdown on protests this year. Well, people have held Friday prayers in front of the Red Cross office in the Gaza Strip in support of Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails. Ruba Shabit has more from Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip took part in Friday prayer in front of the headquarters of the Red Cross. The event, organized by different Palestinian factions, aims to support Palestinian prisoners who are subjected to Israeli abuse.
We are here to stress that we will not disappoint our Palestinian prisoners and we will keep supporting them. Our prisoners are passing through difficult times inside the jails as the regime is attacking the prisoners, especially Islamic Jihad members.
Meanwhile, Palestinians consider the recent heroic escape operation of six prisoners from an Israeli jail as a slap in the face of Israel.
We are doing our best to release Palestinian prisoners, and this is an oath that we should stick with until all Palestinian inmates are free. We are working round the clock to hold meetings and put plans so we can liberate our prisoners and have them run us and with their families. Our resistance made a firm decision that the six Palestinian inmates that escaped Jilbo prison are on top of any coming exchange deal.
The Palestinian resistance mentors the behavior of the Israeli regime towards the prisoners inside the jails and those who remain free, demanding the international institutions to put pressure on Israel regarding the prisoners' issue.
The issue of our inmates inside Israeli jails is ongoing, and there are still two of the six heroic escapees out of the Israeli prison. We are here to express our total support for those inmates and all Palestinian prisoners who are fighting to achieve their demands.
Palestinians here stress they will remain committed to their duty of supporting prisoners and demanding their release. The issue of Palestinian inmates is a priority for Palestinians who will keep demanding their release until they regain complete freedom. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Well, the Yemeni army says it has successfully carried out multiple operations inside and outside the country. Army spokesman Yahya Sarei said the military operation led to the liberation of a vast area of some 1,600 kilometers in the northeastern province of Ma'arib. He added that the army has achieved its goals in the month-long operation in the province and was able to drive Saudi-backed militants out of many areas. Sarei said the army also conducted dozens of retaliatory drone operations inside Saudi Arabia, dealing a heavy blow to the kingdom. The army spokesman said some 3,000 people were killed, over 12,000 injured, and more than 500 others were captured during the operations. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is facing criticism over the appointment of a new culture minister who's accused of Islamophobia. Nadine Dorries once made derogatory remarks about Muslim women. In 2018, she called for a complete ban on the burqa, or veil, worn by some Muslim women in public places. She called the attire oppressive and a medieval dress code, claiming the women wearing it looked like, quote, bank robbers on letterboxes. Critics have decried her remarks as disappointing and dangerous. They say it's worrying that a senior government figure can dictate what a minority of women should wear. They say such a stance contradicts the very idea of a liberal society. Johnson himself has a history of making Islamophobic remarks. The U.S. House Speaker has warned the U.K. that there will be no bilateral trade deal between Washington and London if the Ireland peace agreement is broken.
This is not said as any threat. It's a prediction. If there's destruction of the Good Friday Accords, be very unlikely to have a U.K.-U.S. bilateral.
Pelosi underlined that the Good Friday Accords related to open border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is highly respected in her country. Pelosi made the comments during a visit to the British capital. The warning comes as London and Brussels are at loggerheads over the Northern Ireland protocol that was agreed as part of the Brexit deal and aims to keep the Irish border open. Britain has recently urged the bloc to renegotiate the protocol, but Brussels has already rejected the call. The number of coronavirus cases and related deaths is on the decline in Iran as the government steps up vaccination campaign across the country. Iran's health ministry reported over 17,000 new cases in the past 24 hours. The ministry also said that 364 more people died from the disease in the same period, bringing the total fatalities to over 116,000. The vaccination drive in the country is also gathering momentum as more than 41 million doses have been administered so far. Nearly 170 towns and cities across the nation are currently categorized as very high-risk locations in terms of coronavirus infections. Australia is going to have state-of-the-art atomic-powered submarines. The United States and Britain will provide what's necessary to build them. The trilateral deal has angered China, which believes it's part of America's anti-China efforts.
A new security pact involving the United States, Britain, and Australia has triggered controversy and condemnation. The U.S. and U.K. announced this week that they will provide Australia with advanced technology to build nuclear-powered submarines. Based on their agreement, Australian naval forces will have atomic submarines that are much faster as they use nuclear propulsion systems and harder to detect than conventional fleets. They can spend months under the sea and target longer distances with their missiles. The leaders of the three countries hailed the New Deal as a step that will make it easier to counter threats in the Indo-Pacific. They repeatedly mentioned regional security concerns, which they said had grown significantly. None of them mentioned China, but the pact is being widely viewed as an initiative to counter Chinese influence in the region, including in the contested resource-rich South China Sea.
Well, there are two elements here. One is the fact that this alliance could be a new version of NATO for Indo-Pacific region, and the other is that this purchase of nuclear-powered submarine could be an initial step to transfer more technology to nuclear technology to Australia, maybe in the long term having Australia acquiring nuclear bomb capacity.
The United States and its allies make no secret of their intensified efforts to try to contain the growing Chinese influence and power there. Many observers believe the newly announced deal is in line with those efforts. Meanwhile, the development is expected to further sour relations between Beijing and Canberra. In recent years, political tensions have grown between the two over a number of issues, including Australia's stance against Chinese telecom giant Huawei.
Well, Beijing was very quick to react to the new development, calling it extremely irresponsible and narrow-minded. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said the pact damages regional peace and intensifies the arms race. The pact also drew condemnation from an unlikely critic, France.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Xiao Lijian criticized what he called the U.S.-led alliance's obsolete Cold War mentality and warned the three countries against moves that would hurt their own interests. Some Chinese media went so far as to say that Australia had now turned itself into an adversary of China. What are the implications of this new pact and other moves against China for regional and international security? Meanwhile, China was not the only party infuriated by the new security pact. France condemned it too. That is because Australia will now scrap a deal with France to buy a dozen conventional submarines worth tens of billions of dollars. France's Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian called Australia's agreement with the U.S. and the U.K. a stab in the back. France said the development underscored the need to bolster a, quote, European strategic autonomy. The United States and arch-rival China may have toned down their rhetoric against each other, but tensions between the two superpowers are simmering as they remain deeply engaged in an intense global rivalry. There are many flashpoints in their testy relationship, including tensions in the South China Sea and the issue of Taiwan. America has made it clear that its military will maintain a strong presence in the Indo-Pacific, where the U.S. has been trying to contain the growing influence of its arch-rival. America seems determined to follow policies aimed at containing the Chinese influence worldwide. And with China absolutely unwilling to back down, tensions are expected to mount in the coming years.
In India, hate crime incidents against Muslims are increasing at an alarming pace. From industrialists to small business owners to even hawkers, none is spared. Our correspondent Munawar Zaman has more.
This is one of the world's largest democracies, and on the wall of the parliament, which represents democracy, there is a sentence which reads, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. It means the world is one family, and this is considered the most important moral value of the Indian society. But this is apparently not the case anymore, considering the growing discord in the society. In recent months, attacks against Muslim hawkers have come under the spotlight in social media. Critics say hate crimes against Muslims increased after the emergence of the Hindu nationalist government of the ruling BJP.
In India, from over close to a decade, the Muslim poor community is being further marginalized. This is being done by boycotting the Muslim hawkers and small Muslim traders.
Experts say in India, the political notion has changed from a strong secular nation to a theocratic Hindu nation, which has given rise to violence against Muslims. Now, Hindu extremists have been busy running this show through social media. Experts say the country, which is apparently known as the world's largest democracy, is under grave danger of losing this title. In a nation of diverse ethnic and religious groups, now even beggars are being humiliated and intimidated just because of their faith and are asked to leave the country since they are Muslims. Based on reports by several rights groups, since the ruling BJP came to power in 2014, it has adopted various laws and taken actions that legitimize discrimination against the religious minorities and stigmatize critics of the government. Experts believe it could lead to instability in the world's most populous nation.
Everything is being done to further marginalize Muslims, including hate speeches, hate crimes, mob lynching, the citizenship law, criminalizing divorce, etc. Now they are picking on traders and vendors to weaken the Muslim community economically.
The ruling party of the Prime Minister Modi has fervently denied any discrimination against the community, saying India is a democracy and believes in equal rights for all. But critics say Prime Minister Modi's slogan of everyone together, development for all, and everyone's trust is nothing but a political tool to appease the voters as usual. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The recent meeting in Moscow between Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his Russian host Vladimir Putin was a shock to the terrorists. Whether those operating as mercenaries in the Levant or those directing them from the U.S., the oil-rich Arab states occupy Palestine and certain West European capitals. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kahan International. This article is published under the heading Assad-Putin Summit Sounds Death Knell for Terrorists. Stay tuned for more. The recent meeting in Moscow between Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his Russian host, Vladimir Putin, was a shock to the terrorists. Whether those operating as mercenaries in the Levant or those directing them from the United States, the oil-rich Arab states occupied Palestine and certain West European capitals. It was a warm meeting between two friendly heads of sovereign independent states, who reviewed their vital cooperation and, of course, planned for future action for reconstruction of Syria and for liberation of the last remaining parts of that country under occupation from uninvited armies of the U.S. and Turkey. Russia recently arranged for the return to complete control of the Damascus government of Dara on the borders of Jordan, where sedition was first sparked in 2011. And devilishly exploited by the West and reactionary Arabs to plunge Syria into a 10-year crisis. Now, with the terrorists and their dependents transported to the occupied parts of Idlib in the northwest for the final push out from Syria, the local population that was displaced all these years is streaming back to their hometown. And with newfound confidence that no mischief mongers would ever be allowed in the future to disturb the peace of their hometowns, Jordan has been served notice that under any pretext, it would not be allowed to manipulate the suspicious elements lingering in its so-called refugee camps for causing cross-border tension, and this means the Americans and the Persian Gulf Arabs should also be careful about any misstep. Putin, in his long meeting with Assad that was later joined by Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad and Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, felicitated his guest on winning the recent presidential elections, said, "Foreign armed forces that remain in certain regions of your country without the approval of the United Nations and without your permission have no right to stay." It means the presence of the American troops on Syrian soil is illegal and undesirable, and should immediately end for the sake of peace and stability. It also meant that the U.S. sanctions on sovereign, independent Syria are nothing but a form of economic and political terrorism against the charter of the world body. It should be noted that over the past decade, as many as 500,000 Syrians have been slaughtered by the macabrely murderous terrorists who have destroyed towns and cities and displaced 5 million people from their homes and hearth, in addition to driving out a number of people to eke a miserable life in neighboring Turkey or end up as unwanted and mistreated refugees in parts of Europe. President Bashar al-Assad, as he said in his inaugural re-election speech last month, is greatly indebted to the Islamic Republic of Iran for its timely help in defeating the terrorists and facilitating the arrival and request of the heroic forces of Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorism movement, the Hezbollah. It was Iran which also worked out cooperation between Damascus and Moscow for invitation of Russian troops in 2006 in order to offset the illegal presence of the U.S. forces. It should be recalled that President Assad had visited Tehran on a landmark visit on February 25, 2019, and met with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, thanks to the efforts of that great diplomat and field commander against terrorism, Qasem Soleimani, whom the U.S. criminally martyred in January 2020 in Baghdad. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
We get people.
Gangs of America.
Gangs, they have been present in the United States for hundreds of years,
And since then, gangs have evolved and their criminal activities have expanded. A great amount of violence today in America takes place because of gang presence. Youth from a very young age join these gangs. We have to ask ourselves why.
Does somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up, we gotta go show them who's the real killers? That's the same mentality these gangsters get. You know what I mean? So until they stop that mentality, we won't stop. Or they won't stop. Because they watch this country to see what they do. America is the biggest gang in the world.
Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we will speak about gangs, what their criminal activities are, gangs in the police department, and much more. Please stay tuned.
It has happened again. Another violent robbery and assault caught on camera in Oakland's Chinatown. This time a man was shot for trying to intervene. KPXX5's John Ramos spoke to residents who say they are living in fear and describe their neighborhood as the Wild Wild West.
Another day, another robbery in Oakland's Chinatown, and now things are starting to get even more violent. Caught on a surveillance camera, the robbery began when a pair of men hopped out of a car to grab the purses of two women on the sidewalk. Two young men intervene and begin struggling with the robbers. That's when the guns come out. One young man falls to the ground as the struggle continues. Finally, both assailants, who each held handguns, jump back in their car and drive off. The gunshot victim was hit in the arm and is lucky to be alive. It happened in broad daylight near the corner of 8th and Franklin, one of Chinatown's busiest shopping areas.
Americans experienced much more violence in 2020 compared to previous years. Gun violence and gun crime increased significantly, with over 19,000 people killed in shootings and firearm-related incidents in 2020. This number of deaths is the highest in more than 20 years. Mass shootings, which are classified as an incident in which four or more people are shot and injured or killed, has risen sharply to over 600, the most in the past 5 years, and nearly 50% increase in 2019's total. Much of the violence involves guns is related to gangs, gang warfare, and retaliation.
According to the FBI, some 33,000 violent street gangs, motorcycle gangs, and prison gangs are criminally active in the U.S. today. U.S. law enforcement categorizes these gangs as sophisticated and well-organized. They say that they all use violence to control neighborhoods and boost their illegal money-making activities, which include robberies, drug, and gun trafficking, prostitution and human trafficking, and fraud. Our first guest, Ramiro Fuentes, an activist and political commentator, is joining us.
One phenomenon of the United States that is interesting to the rest of the world, that a lot of people of other nations outside of the United States frequently wonder about, is the prominence and rise of gangs, mainly street gangs, in cities like Los Angeles, where I'm speaking to you from now, New York, Chicago. The city where I'm speaking to you now, Los Angeles, for many years was considered the gang capital of the world. A lot of the major street gangs that were formed were created here, a few miles away from where I'm speaking to you now. Some of these gangs are well known, the Bloods, the Crips, and interestingly enough, a lot of gangs that were formed in Los Angeles, including MS-13 as well, were rooted in imperialism and capitalism, were the result of U.S. colonization, poverty, racism.
Many gang members continue to commit crimes even after being sent to jail. There are no new statistics, but according to a report published in 2011, more than 1.4 million Americans were part of gangs, and more than 33,000 gangs were active in the United States in 2011. Some other statistics suggest that there are about a million gang members in America today.
Raymond Washington was just 16 years old when he created what has now become one of the largest street gangs in the world. As the founder of the Crips, he planned to create multiple South Central Los Angeles, Watts, and Compton Crip gangs that would be united, protecting their neighborhoods from outside threats. But things would not go as he had planned, and the Crip gangs that Raymond Washington originally started eventually took on a life of their own.
The history of gangs in the United States goes back to the 18th century. Now most gangs are comprised of Hispanics with about 45%, then African Americans with about 36%, and then whites with 11%, and the rest are a mix of other races. In the beginning, most gangs were formed by immigrants, and to this date, race plays a major role in gangs, gang membership, and activities. Our second guest, Emilio Viano, president of the International Society of Criminology, speaks to us about the role of race and ethnicity in gangs.
Well, certainly that is one of the traditions in American, at least, organized crime. Take for example, the mafia, that obviously was imported, if you want, especially from Italy, but there was also an Irish mafia. There was also a Jewish mafia, particularly in the Miami area, that then developed, so to speak, Cuba, for example, and reflected their status in society, where they were often, you know, excluded, despised, called names, refused employment. There was a time when in New York and other cities, in a restaurant, in a bar, in a business, there may be a sign saying, Irish, do not need to apply. Italians, stay out. In other words, they were excluded from the market. And so they needed to band together in order to survive.
Blacks, Hispanics, Native Americans, and other minorities in the United States feel neglected and marginalized. Coming from poor and low-income backgrounds, these minority groups often join or create gangs as a way of escaping poverty or to protect themselves. Nowadays, the sources of income of many of these gangs is through criminal activities. Many American cities have well-known street gangs, such as New York City, Detroit, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Washington, D.C. Chicago is one of the cities that is known for its gangs, violence, and crime. The presence of gangs like the Bloods, the Crips, Netta, Gangster's Disciples, and the Latin Kings adds to the volatile situation in the city.
The city has a huge problem of segregation along poverty lines. The poor people in Chicago are isolated in the neighborhoods with the fewest resources and almost no opportunities for advancement. It's a situation that's known to develop and foster a disenfranchised criminal class. But the city also has a population problem. Almost 200,000 people have left Chicago since 2000, and the effects have been devastating. Businesses are closing, the city is collecting less in taxes, its infrastructure is crumbling, and the middle class is leaving town quickly.
One of the main reasons young people join gangs is poverty and unemployment. This is seen mostly in the African-American community, Hispanic and Native American communities, as well as other minorities in the United States, especially in urban areas and large cities. Lack of a good education and job opportunities puts these communities at a disadvantage, and this motivates a number of youth to drop out of school at a young age and join street gangs that provide them with an income, albeit through criminal activity.
We also know that unemployment is very high among Native American communities, Latino communities, African American communities, and gangs step in and fill in where small businesses and the government does not fill in. In a lot of poor working class neighborhoods in the United States, there is no government plan to create jobs. There is no plan to give people a trade, to give people the skills they need to sustain themselves. And a lot of these gangs influence youth who are looking for money, who are looking for a way out of poverty. And they come in with these offers of performing criminal activity in exchange for money. So again, their influence is largely based on the failures of the so-called free market, the failures of the U.S. government to be able to provide people with the ability for them to fend for themselves, to have skills, to have good jobs and a good living.
Another reason that American youth are attracted to gangs is for a sense of identity, belonging, and recognition. These young people are often motivated, forced, or intimidated to commit serious crimes and even murder to become one of the gang members. Absence of family bonds and the breakup of families also contributes to this phenomenon.
There are several programs conducted by law enforcement and authorities in the United States to stop gangs and gang violence, but so far gang membership has increased. The injustice and corrupt system in America often pushes various segments of society to take matters into their own hand. Some take advantage of this void in certain communities and form criminal gangs and misuse their power to commit crimes against ordinary citizens.
The public schools are extremely underfunded, oversized classrooms, teachers with huge workloads, and students do not get the resources or care they deserve in terms of their primary and secondary education. And so what this results is that children have no after-school programs, they have no ability to take out that energy, because as children, you naturally have a lot of energy, you naturally want to belong to a community of other young people. And because in many public schools across the United States, they're cutting sports programs, they're cutting after-school programs, they're privatizing everything, what else is there left to do but to hang out on the street, to join other street gangs, and participate in bad and criminal activity?
The police, that is meant to serve the community at large, has become a gang in itself. Not only do some critics view police as a gang that targets certain people, especially ethnic minorities, but now it's a known fact that gang members have been working as police officers throughout the country for many years.
The Los Angeles County Inspector General wrote a report claiming Sheriff Alex Villanueva promotes a, quote, code of silence surrounding secret deputy gangs. The report focuses on a deputy group identified as the Banditos. They say the members disrupt day-to-day operations at the East LA Sheriff's Station by creating tension between deputies who are members and those who are not. It calls on the LASD to thoroughly investigate all internal criminal allegations. The IG report says the FBI has also opened its own probe into the Banditos. Villanueva in the past denied there is an FBI investigation.
Journalist Cerise Castle produced a 15-episode series called A Tradition of Violence, the history of deputy gangs in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Now, she states there are at least 18 gangs within the department. These deputies commit all kinds of crimes, including murder in police uniform.
An explosive CBS News investigation looks into alleged gangs of deputies inside the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Our investigation found these deputies are allegedly encouraged to shoot people as part of their initiation. The California Attorney General launched a civil rights investigation into these claims last month.
A report by Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department cited one deputy who claimed in a recent deposition a group called the Executioners celebrated at bars after a deputy sheriff shot someone. The deputy would then receive the group's common tattoo, a skull wearing a Nazi-style helmet and holding a rifle while surrounded by flames.
The U.S. government itself is organized into multiple factions of gangs and is organized in a way that promotes police gangs. For example, here in Los Angeles, within the Los Angeles Police Department, the LAPD, there are several gangs that are organized within the police units themselves. There's one gang called the Banditos, the Bandits, that have certain quotas to kill young black and brown youth. And this has been uncovered. This is public knowledge that there are gangs operating within the LAPD, within police departments across the country. And the government not only is not doing anything to prevent gangs from spreading, they are organizing themselves. At least the lower ranks of government, police officers, law enforcement, are organized in these gangs to continue to oppress black, brown, poor people in the United States.
A need for protection, safety, and security in communities where violence and shootings are rampant forces community members who are not involved in violence but do not have a means to leave that community, take up arms, and join local gangs. When violence and shooting occurs, it is not just parties involved that get injured or die. There have been many reports that innocent bystanders and often children are killed by stray bullets.
4,500 Americans were killed in Iraq. This many in Afghanistan. More have been killed in Chicago since 2001 than in both wars combined.
Just last week, a 4-year-old boy was hospitalized and in critical condition after he was shot on Friday, September the 3rd, in the Woodlawn neighborhood on Chicago's south side. Reports indicate that the bullet flew through a window before striking the child inside his home. Chicago police say that the boy suffered 2 gunshot wounds to the head and was taken to an area hospital.
Rob, right now, doctors here at Comer Children's Hospital are working trying to save a four-year-old boy who was rushed here critically injured just about an hour ago. Chicago police say that little boy was inside a home at 65th and Ellis in the Woodlawn neighborhood when a bullet came through the front window and somehow hit that young boy who was inside the home. Video from the scene shows the bullet through the front window of that three-story apartment building and shell casings littering the front yard of that area. This is the second four-year-old child who has been shot this week on the city's south side. And just a few months ago, on June 24th, a four-year-old boy was also shot in that exact same block in Woodlawn and critically injured, though that child is okay. We're speaking to police who are trying to figure out exactly the circumstances that led up to this. There are also community activists here who are trying to make contact with family members, trying to figure out exactly the circumstances that led up to the shooting, whether this was something that happened outside the home, something that may have started inside the home. Right now, all of those situations are not known. But again, this makes many children shot in the city this summer. More than 240 children have been shot in the city of Chicago so far this year.
In Chicago alone, according to Chicago Police Department in 2020, there were 117,000 gang members who are part of the city's 55 known gangs. Of this 55 gangs, there are 747 factions, which also have 2,500 subsets. The police superintendent at the time said there are several hundred gang conflicts related to the 117,000 gang members in Chicago on any given day of the week and on any hour of the day.
A remedy to a situation of exclusion. As a matter of fact, we can talk about the gangs follow a common theme. And what is it? The desire for power, for respect, for money, for protection. And these desires are very influential in attracting individuals to join gangs, and their influence is especially strong among at-risk youth. And what is happening is that many of these individuals experience low levels of these various factors in their own lives. They may feel ostracized from their community for reasons of race or education or income. They lack social support, so that joining a gang appears to them to be the only way to obtain status and success.
There are many initiatives within the police department, the Justice Department, and the FBI to fight gangs in the United States and to stop gang violence. Every year, they arrest and sentence gang members to long prison terms. But statistics and news reports still show a rise in gang recruitment activities and violence, indicating that the official approach has failed to curb gang violence.
I think gangs can be positive. It just has to be organized and has to steer away from being self-destructive to being self-productive. I think this country was built on gangs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs, Republicans, Democrats. The police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. Mm-hmm. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up. You know what I mean? So it's this whole country is built on gangs. We just have to not be so self-destructive about it. Organize, you know?
The rise of gangs in the U.S. is consistent with American imperialism, and almost any popular known gang was created in the country. And this is why Los Angeles was called the gang capital of the world. Poverty, immigration of oppressed people from poor nations, which were colonized or destroyed by the U.S. to a land where they did not have a chance to have a reasonable life and income, forced them into organizing these gangs to fend for themselves and protect themselves against other immigrants and the U.S. government.
The role of race and ethnicity in U.S. street gangs is very important. And I think this touches on the fact that the United States is not a nation. The United States is not like any other country in the world. The United States is an empire composed of imprisoned Global South nations within its borders. We know that in the Southwest, we have Mexican indigenous communities that have been colonized and oppressed for hundreds of years. In the Southeast, we have African Black communities that have been colonized and oppressed for many years. We also have Native American communities, the Navajo community being one of the biggest that is also oppressed. And also in the Northeast, we have large sectors of the Puerto Rican diaspora, which is another nation colonized by U.S. imperialism. And as the U.S. begins to colonize, to impose its market, its ideas, its cultures on these nations, and force people out of their own lands, displacing them, forcing them to look for work, for opportunities in these new countries, in the U.S., these groups of communities of nations are forced to create these gangs as a self-defense unit against migrants who have already been there for many years earlier.
The U.S. government and state governments have many initiatives to support young people and attempt to stop them from joining gangs. But clearly, these are not enough. Another challenge is that there are young gang members who are fed up and decide to leave the gang. But leaving the gang usually amounts to a death sentence.
Then there is also a whole systems that allow them or helps and facilitates for them to leave the gangs. And I work myself in some of these programs here, and at one point also in Mexico, particularly in Nuevo León, Monterrey, where that is one of the major challenges. Many of these young people at some point want to leave, but they know that they leave, they're going to get killed. So how can we help them? And how can we also give them the training that they never receive? Most often they don't go to school, they don't go to school even if they should be there, they don't learn to work a normal trade for normal employment. So there is a lot of work to be done. It's not so easy, but there are programs that are aimed at that, in trying to help them.
Violence and gangs normally go hand in hand and are extensively covered in the U.S. media. Is there a way to stop the violence? Gang members are normally from a segment of society that are not accepted by the rest of the people. Stopping violence and gang criminal activity requires us to discover why these gangs exist in the first place and what their needs and demands are.
We killing each other because we killing ourselves. We're not, when another man, I know, I've been in a position, it's out of our control. It's not like he wants to kill. He just doesn't want to die. You know what I'm saying? It's that situation when you got, we are living in a war zone. It's not as easy as these people are making us think, that we just got some criminal ass black kids with guns. It is not like that. We live in hell. We live in the gutter. We got us stacked up 80 deep in one building. You know, by the time you get out your house, you strapped to protect yourself. Because you're living in the same community that the police is carrying rifles and riot gear. Same, they need them riot, excuse my language, I'm so sorry. The same reasons they need the riot hat, the riot jacket, the flak jacket, the double vest, the 9mm Glocks with extra bullets, the tear gas, the mace, all that. Who do you think the police is using that against? Dogs?
Well, that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next week on We the People. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kHz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.